Everybody, happy Monday night. It's October 2nd, 2023. This is Across the Pitch. Jose, it's just you and me tonight, buddy. How you doing today?
I'm doing all right, man. It's been a whirlwind of a couple of weeks, I think. Obviously, you were away for a little bit, Dave and I. And just honestly, the whirlwind with everything that's gone on with the union, with, you know, this quick succession of matches, as well as more than dull, I guess is probably fair to say, results, five straight draws. So it's been an interesting time.
It absolutely has been. I have been MIA for what seems like forever. For those of you who don't follow me on my other platforms, I was away in Disney. I left Saturday night and I drove through the night, got to Orlando mid-afternoon on Sunday, spent a couple days there with my daughter, and then I drove back Wednesday all day until I came back.
That's bananas, Mike. Like, I don't understand how you do that drive. Maybe it's just the scale to me is just kind of like, oh, that's a lot.
So just for those who are planning their Disney vacations, the tickets for planes and stuff was a lot of money. I was also going by myself with my daughter. So I was like, I can just put her in a car and go. With gas alone, it only cost me $200 there and back on gas. So really not that bad in terms of the price. But my job and what I do every day is very chaotic. So for me to just sit in a car and do nothing but drive is actually a vacation for me. It was nice. It was just, I have no responsibilities. I have to go from point A to point B and that's it. But ironically,
to be fair though, Mike, like as a dad of two, I totally acknowledge that, right? The silence, especially when the kids are in bed, never mind being in front of the wheel for as long as you were. Maybe it is better than I think, right? Like it's that peace and quiet and the just like complete mental break. I think there's something to be said about that.
Yeah, Saturday I went from 6:30 in night all the way till 3 a.m. and then I fell asleep in a parking lot until like 5:30 or so, and then I kept driving. So I had a break at some point between Saturday and Sunday, but Wednesday I drove 17 and a half hours basically straight with a few breaks in between. And tell you what, Thursday, I went to work Thursday also, and I was like, guys, I'm here. I'm also very much not here, so just bear with me here. But
I'm here physically, but mentally, give me 10 minutes and it'll catch up.
even physically, I wasn't there. But it's the funny thing, though, was that I happened to be driving down on both days at Union Games. So on Saturday night, I drove down during the LAFC match. I got to listen to the match there. And then on the way back on Wednesday was the FC Dallas match. So I did have some union stuff going on in my ears along the way, which was kind of nice. And we have a lot to talk about. To your point, Jose, the union are on an unbeaten streak, which is like, you know, golf clap. They're doing well. They're not losing games. But at the same time, it has been probably the most lackluster unbeaten streak that I can remember. And I'm not excited for it at all. So what are your thoughts on this as you've basically not won anything for a while?
Yeah, it's hard, right? And I think the conversation that sprouted today, and I like to sort of give ours, like our group, me, you and Dave, sort of like a pat in the back, right? We've been sort of keeping an eye on this and been talking about it, but of course a bigger outlet talks about it and a lot of attention gets drawn, which is totally fair. We get it, right? We're small journalists, content creators, whatever you want to call it, but the conversation surrounding the just asinine amount of games. And listen, I'll be completely, transparent. And you can roll the show and roll the tape back. I would, from the beginning, just absolutely loved everything that was Leagues Cup, right? The ability to watch Mexican teams, the Spanish culture coming here. I mean, even Fuerza Regida being that the theme song of the tournament was kind of like, oh my God, this is such a shocker, I think, for a lot of Americans.
It was a banger, too.
It was a great summer song for that July tournament. But now we're seeing maybe the direct results, right? And we've been talking about it. I mean, Rene Washington in the Philly Sports, Philly Union show talked about it, which was awesome. I had submitted that question and Rene and Alejandro acknowledged it, which was great. We've heard it from Curtin, right? The uncharted territory comment that he's stressed three or four times. And, maybe to give a little bit of a, fair conversation was, I sat on that audio, and thank you to Todd Lewis from the Free Kick for giving it back to me because I had lost actually the audio. But Mikel Ua, who's like, well, listen, I enjoy this because I'm used to it, right? I was in Europe playing Europa League and playing my league as well as like a domestic tournament beyond that. So he's accustomed to it, though. You gotta also realize in his short time with the Union, he's already made 101 appearances versus while he was at Bronby, 55 appearances from 2018 through 2022. So a little bit different of a scale. At least that's what Wikipedia tells me. I didn't go too deep since the kids were home. But nonetheless, listen, we've been talking about it, and now obviously it's becoming more and more apparent when you see five draws in a row.
It's very much like how it was last May. If you remember last May, it was like, oh, the Union can't win a game. They kept drawing like crazy. And then they kind of went on the hot streak. Right when Sergio Santos got traded, that's when the gear clicked in. So to Curtin's point last year, he kept saying, we're not losing games. And that's really important. We are still earning points, which is fair. I mean, they're only 3 points back from second place. They are still very much in the fight for a home playoff match. It just doesn't feel like it did last year because they just seem to be either dropping points, not playing effectively. They just seem to be falling apart, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, even Jesus Bueno, you know, hits the floor on was it, I think, Saturday, and you're like, here's another injury, here's something else. You see Jack Elliott, doing the free kicks for Andre Blake, and you're like, what's wrong with Andre? Even they say on the commentators, he's grabbing his left knee. You're like, everybody just seems to be falling apart. I mean, credit to the right backs. I feel like Harriel and Olivier have rotated so well. They both look fairly fresh, but that's really about it in terms of freshness.
Yeah, and, you know, I think based on Jim's comments this week, like, or after the match this past weekend, you know, I was, and I mentioned it during my appearance at the Philly Union show. Thank you, Renee, and that group for having me over last Friday. But, you know, at what point is Sky going to get the injury bug, right? Like, he's played an unbelievable amount of minutes. Of course, he's a competitor and wants to play every single game, but that rotation was just bad. And I know folks from the Philadelphia Inquirer had been knocking on that, you know, that conversation many, many times of, our center backs need rotation. The rotation needs to happen. And fast forward to today, when you see this conversation sprout up again, all of a sudden, with more players coming out and being on the record, the Union roster is 23 out of 30, or the 23 bodies out of the 30 possible. But that doesn't mean that all 30 are as capable of as the first 11, right? So let's just be fully transparent about that. But that also goes to show that, you know, not only do they get 30 slots, but they also have to have the added complexity of having so many players of this age, and you can only have so many designated players, and you can have so many, you know, there's a lot of different things that you have to weigh in when you look into that puzzle. So I think now we're seeing the results of it, and I'm really excited for tomorrow. I'm talking to a sports lawyer to sort of walk through the CBA and see, you know, during that, in that Inquirer story, there was a piece about, you know, this was sort of snuck past the CBA and the players without consultation. But according to a source that spoke to the Inquirer, they had said, well, the CBA accounted for it, so yeah, we can do it. Or they can't, this, you know, the entire Leagues Cup was still available to happen. So it'll be really interesting. I'm excited for this conversation. It's all, you know, based on anonymity, which is fine by me. And, you know, again, another sort of, you know, if anybody ever wants to talk, always willing to, as in whatever terms you want, whether it's on the record, off the record, on background, always willing to chat.
Yeah, the Union in general have played about 9 more matches than most teams. I think they mentioned that in the last game we played in. So by the end of the year, they'll have played approximately a third of a season on top of their season from last year. That's unbelievable. It really
is.
It's a lot. Even for players, like, I know you said Uwa feels like more comfortable with it, and that's fine. Eventually it's going to catch up. It just is. And it's just, I worry about not even just our team, but just the product. And I think Andre had mentioned as well in the interview that you're referring to, the product of what you're looking at. It sucks. Like, it sucks to see these players dropping like flies every other day. And it's going to continue if they want to have such a congested season year after year after year. It's just, eventually you're going to cut these careers short when they could be much longer than what they are.
And not just that, Mike, and I think you commented on it or in a specific aspect of it all, right? Where, like, Philadelphia, your example was in terms of Kai's the conversation surrounding Kai, right? If the Philadelphia Union continue to have this image and reputation of being low spenders, what player is going to want to come here when you can have a bigger payday elsewhere, which is totally valid and fair, right? Careers can be very, very short, just one injury away from never playing again. What does this treatment of players or this treatment of the product say to players from the outside looking in terms of wanting to come and play in the MLS, right?
I wouldn't want to.
Sure. And you're always going to have, and this is where I think, and maybe I need to flat out ask them. Maybe this is a little bit of conjecture, but you think about the Jesus Buenos of the world. You think about the Jose Martinez of the world. I know it didn't work out, but the Davos of the world, players who are coming from really, really rough backgrounds and countries that are not as wealthy as the United States. And they go from making pennies on the dollar in Venezuela or Colombia, Brazil, etc., to now making a livable wage in the United States, right? I think the average salary in MLS is somewhere in the, I don't think it's triple, I don't think it's six digits, but it's certainly more than what they would probably be making out in those countries. So it's just a really interesting dynamic. But if you're one of those players, does it make sense, right? And this sort of adds another wrinkle, and I'll stop talking a second, Mike, but this sort of adds another wrinkle into the whole idea of, like, Kai wants to get paid because he's earned it as a player. But when you really take a step back and think as a mortal, because you and I don't play professional soccer, so I consider us mere mortals, not professional athletes. When we assess the way that we are paid, the more work we do, the more we want to be paid.
Sure.
So Kai and all of these players have sort of a standing, or can have a standing argument of, we're playing more, we want to be paid more. And I would say I would not invalidate that. I think that's totally fair if you think about how much more they're playing. As you said, an additional third of a season.
And you
also, and sure, the League's Cup prize was there, but you know what I mean.
You also have to think about, like you said, if the average salary is roughly around six figures, and it, or maybe even slightly lower than six figures, I mean, that's not something that you can live off of for the rest of your life. It's not like you're getting, you know, LeBron James money salary coming in. Think about
living in LA, California, Colorado, right? Very tough places to make it on, honestly, $100,000.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I have friends that live in Manhattan. Their rent is $4,000 a month. So
yeah,
it's all, you know, relative to where you're going. But if you are a player who's making, let's say hypothetically, $90,000, you want your career to be as long as possible. And if they're being run into the ground, now you've only played a 7 to 8 year career, 9 year career, for example, only making 90,000. That's not a lot of money in terms of, like, moving forward, because now you have to find a career that's going to be somewhat sustainable. And if your point is a lot of players are coming from very impoverished areas, they may not have the education or wherewithal to then continue a career past their playing time to then be relatively successful. And I mean successful in the sense that they're making the same amount of money they would be when they stopped playing. It's tough, man. Professional athletes who don't get paid a lot have a very tough choice ahead of them, because it's not an easy transition.
Yeah, and you and I started working at, I started working at whatever, 16, 17 as a, you know, high school kid or whatever, and I'll probably work till I'm 66 if I'm lucky, or like 70, 75, who knows, you know, how whatever happens with, and that's a different conversation. A professional athlete, you start playing probably at 15, 16, if you're, you know, good. But your career's probably, at least in the MLS, you're probably done early 30s, mid 30s at the latest, right? Yep. Like, Messi is such an outlier. I'm looking right now. Max McCarthy, how old is he? Right? He's someone who's been around forever. He's 36 and he's only making, I shouldn't say only, but $400,000 a year. Wow. So, you know, at 36, hopefully he's had and amassed enough. And honestly, another question I would love to ask someone like Alejandro Bedoya is the MLSPA and are the MLS doing enough to educate the Jack McGlynns of the world, the Nate Harrells of the world, Donovan, Trent Holden, who, you know, it's such a rare thing to say his name out loud. Are they getting enough education about their wealth and what they need to do in case this doesn't work out, right? Because who knows? They could be one contract away from never playing again.
It's tough. So my dad was a professional athlete. He was a jockey since he was about 15, 16, all the way till he was about 50.
Hold up.
He rode for 30 years, yeah.
Horse jockey?
Yeah, my dad was a jockey.
It totally makes sense now.
It makes sense now. It all adds up. For people who have ever met me physically, it all makes sense. So a lot of times my mom and dad would say that they saw a lot of their fellow riders and jockeys suffer because they had poor agents. They didn't understand the English well enough to be successful in America. They obviously had gambling problems too with the line of work that's in. Like, there's so many things that get in the player's way. And he said how many times he's seen fellow riders just be broke even while they're riding because they don't have the education. They don't have the right people in their corner. And you see that across many leagues. It's not even just horse racing. You can look at, you know, Antoine Walker for the NBA. I'm pretty sure he was the one who had gone bankrupt or something. You can even look at somebody like the guy from St. Joe's. And I can't think of who it is right now. He's on the streets recently. I know Mark Cuban tried to help him out in the NBA. And for those who are listening, if you can remind me, I can't think of his name right now. He played with Jameer Nelson.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Is it West? Last name West?
Yes, Delonte West.
Yeah. So
it's tough, man. And then the problem is that you get also injuries that go with being a professional athlete. And if you want anybody watch the Kelce documentary, and what an amazing documentary that was, you saw how much pain Kelce's in on a regular basis and how much anti-inflammatories he has to take, X, Y, and Z. And it's like these players do then have to transition their bodies into post, you know, playing lifestyle. And they're, some of them are on pain medications, and it's hard to get off that kind of stuff when you're on it all the time.
Yeah, this is such a fascinating conversation, though. I want to make sure that we're not out of our depth and start, you know, talking into mental health and physical health, etc. You know, I just want to be super mindful of that, because you and I don't have any idea what I'm talking about, or nor am I certified to talk about it. But yeah, it's concerning. And I hope that there's a solution, right? And hopefully, and you know what, just want to be super fair, and whether there was a language barrier type of situation, or he genuinely meant it, which he could have, Mikael Ulla cannot be the only one who's totally fine with the way that they've been sort of, like, you know, worked, right? So just to be super open about that too, if Mikael Ulla is one, I'm sure that every team has at least one or two more who just genuinely are like, it's fine, guys, like, we can play. So just so we have some fair and balanced reporting in a way.
No, that's fair. And so Kyle mentions boxing. It's another one. Great point, Kyle. And also he's half of the one team we agree on with his wife, Jillian. Great show. Awesome. They're great people. Meet them at the tailgate. They're fun. But Frank makes a good point. How much additional money is each team receiving from the Apple TV deal when compared to last year? Bigger question of the increased amount. How much goes to owners versus investing in players? That's an excellent question. Jose, do you have any idea? Because I do not.
Well, it was, what, a $2.3 billion deal?
Messi got half of it, of course.
I'm sorry. Fortune, the website Fortune, tells me that it's a $2.5 billion. And listen, I think this is a wonderful question. If we can just put it back up, I'll go ahead and do so. But I don't know that we have any idea. I'm sure that there's a specific cut, and it all works out in a certain way that was, you know, acceptable and accepted by all the owners. But I think that you don't have to look much further, and I think I know where Frank's question's going, than the comments that Alejandro Bedoya made when he was asked, or I provided the question, and Renee was able to ask it you know, was the financial reward of Leagues Cup worth the uncharted territory that teams are finding themselves in, right? Was the X amount of dollars that each player got every single time they played, or every single time that they made it to the next round, was that enough for finding themselves playing 1 1/3 season?
Yeah.
And I don't think we'll ever know.
I would say no. I mean, think of it, even just players like Kai, who's had a lot of, you know, he had a hamstring issue early this year. You look at Glessens, he's had, I think it was a hernia problem, right? I mean, how much of that is
developing into a hernia, just to be, again, careful with what we're saying. Yeah, Jim said it was building into a sports hernia, not that it was necessarily one.
Think about how much of that might have been caused by this constant overworked play. I mean, granted, I know he was trying to go for that streak of 100 and some games, which is great. But I mean, maybe he could have taken a day off and we could say, you know what, the streak's nice, but your career is more important, to be perfectly honest.
And I think that's a super valid point, Mike. And I know Kyle and Jillian are watching, Todd Lewis from the Free Kick Pod, and you know, the other freelance writer who has a website, and Delco Sports and the Enquirer would probably all agree. I think that some of it has also has to be attributed to the lack of rotation, right? And maybe that's just sort of, you know, being handcuffed to the fact that you only have so many players that in reality are able to play MLS minutes, right?
Yeah.
I think you said it this weekend. What a rare sighting Matt Real was this weekend, right?
Very rare. He hasn't played since Leagues Cup?
Since Leagues Cup, yeah. And that was, you know, like a start, and then he came off at half or something. Like it was something, it was substantial, but not like a full 90. Mm-hmm. Macania, where has he been, right? He's on a Philadelphia Union proper contract. Raffanello, I mean Torres, who was a question that was asked during the press conference from the Delco Times guy. So it's some of the blame for some of this. Not blame, but it has to be said that, you know, man rotation is also part of the puzzle, and we can't just forget about it and pretend like, you know, it's not part of it altogether.
That's true. I mean, we saw, and I always mispronounce the guy's name, this, the defender you just mentioned that we picked
Macania, up. Macania, I think that's Macania. How you say it. That's how Jim said it to me when I asked him about Union players going to the Union too.
Well, it was that he just played for the playoff team for yep. Union too. I mean, even Chris Donovan, listen, credit to Donovan. He's playing a lot. He's playing both rosters pretty regularly. I know Raffanello plays Union too. We saw Raffanello on the Red Bull match, and I thought he played fairly well. Eventually, you just got to play these guys. I mean, even Quinn Sullivan, we had talked already about Quinn Sullivan, how he wasn't getting a whole lot of minutes. You could argue that he could have definitely saved some of our other guys' legs for an extra 20, 15 minutes here or there, periodically speaking. He just sometimes didn't even see the game, or we would leave subs on the bench just kind of wasting away.
Yeah, and that's just it too, right? Like, I know you and I have had off camera conversations and maybe off of Twitter as well of like, you know, how is this logical, right? Jim is belly aching about the roster and having to need expansions, and you hear it from people in Europe, and that's a different conversation altogether because they have unlimited money in a way compared to the Union. But then you hear it from Steve Cherundolo out in LAFC, which you could also argue play by completely different rules. But you know, like, it can't be reactive substitutions. You sort of have to be proactive in a way too, right? You can't wait till the 79th minute for 10 minutes. I mean, that still, to me, weighs in as much of a game, right? And Jim has said, you know, we pulled them off in the 55th or the 65th, and that's sort of like a training session. Okay, so do that again, you know?
Like, right.
Or I was so surprised, and I think a lot of people were, 45th minute subs from Jim this past weekend, which
I was stunned. I couldn't believe it.
Which is sort of what was needed for this team to rotate the bodies. So, for what it's worth.
So here's a good point by Frank. With the additional games, I wonder if the team's medical and training staff will need upgrades. People and training don't see the additional games reduced with Apple's influence, which is, I don't see that either, Frank. But that's a good point. You know, eventually, when are these, you know, do they have the staff to keep up with the new wear and tear that these players are facing?
Well, it's only going to increase the number of games, right? As you think about World Cup qualifiers happening, starting, I should say, right? Venezuela is already going into two windows towards the tail end of a season. So throw in World Cup qualifiers throughout the entirety of a season, not just, you know, happening in September or whatever it was, August and October. So there's going to be more games in terms of that for those that, you know, make it. So that's an added sort of thing, but also all these different competitions that are popping up, Leagues Cup, then, CONCACAF Champions Cup, Campeones Cup. Then you have US Open Cup. Then you have the MLS with its 34 games that only eliminate 11 teams out of contention in the playoffs. So yeah, it's not going to get any smaller. And I think that's a wonderful question. And I'd be intrigued, you know, is it Paul Rushing? Is it Paul Rushing? Who is the Union
guy who got the red card? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Tattooed beard. I think it's Paul Rushing. Yeah. Does he get additional staff, right? Does his team get a bigger locker room. Yes, Frank, Copa America, Club World Cup 2025.
I was about to say, if you win the CCC, you get to go to the Club World Cup. Now it's not with extra games for them. It almost dissented. Like, there's lack of incentive to keep winning these things because you know you're just going to get run into the ground. And also to your point, Jose, about whether a player will want to come to the union to play with them based on how they treat their players if they do not sign Kai. If I'm a player looking the MLS from the outside in, would I want to go to a league that just runs into the ground? The travel's insane, right?
Yep.
The temperatures are insane. The climates are different everywhere you go. And then on top of that, why would you want to go to a team like the Union, who you know aren't going to pay you top dollar? It's a lot of Kevin Durant needs to open his checkbook is what I'm trying to say.
No, I think a lot of. And I have no insider information. None of us do about this, but you know, like all this open commentary on rule changes, and you know, have Hercules Gomez out on Twitter also, you know, retweeting stuff where Andre Blake saying, "Oh, the players need to, you know, get together and take a stand." Pep Guardiola said the same about, you know, well, eventually you just got to take the Spanish women's national team model and just completely strike, you know, like just flat out say we want changes or we won't play. So it's just so, it's so fascinating that, you know, we're getting to this point. So I'm thinking that next year owners will get found out, right? Those that want to spend will spend. Those that don't want to spend, nothing will change. And you don't have to look much further than what Chris Albright and Pat Noonan were able to build in order to turn that franchise around into being the best team this entire season. Yeah. Playoffs aside, turning that team, you know, like as soon as how beautiful it is for Chris Albright to walk into a situation where he can be afforded an $8 million player, you know, like, sure. and have the success that he's had in such a short time. So, congratulations to Cincinnati. I think that's due and in order from us as you know, the pundits or whatever journalists. But like, what would Tanner cook up? What would Jim cook up? Right, that meme. Hold up, let them cook. What would they cook if a wallet was actually open and they could purchase the players that they want to purchase? And Jim mentioned it about, you know, the Union 2. Let them, you know, if the Union 2 play Union Ball, it's like, okay, we know what Union Ball is. But how beautiful could Union Ball be if we added the pieces that, you know, we can't afford or we choose not to afford?
Well, Jim's been calling out the front office discreetly
all season.
All season. He's like, well, we don't have the players. And he said that before, too. He's always mentioned this team is on it. There's no superstar on this team. There's always it's a team of 11, yada, mm-hmm. yada, yada. You see here at almost every other press conference, especially when you don't win a game. And if you look back even at the, was it the COVID Cup when he calls out NYCFC for being a, you know, a gas driven or was it, what do you call it? I forget the terminology he used.
Oil driven.
Yeah. But I feel like we've gone off on a tangent. We haven't even talked about the Union games coming up and what happened. So first and foremost, let's talk about the most recent game. We had the 1-1 draw against Columbus. The Union were actually up 1-0 before they fell to them after a PK from Columbus. What were your thoughts on the match, both how the team played and the result?
You know, big ups to Nate Harriel, I think man of the match performance, though I was mostly interested in, as I mentioned it to Renee Washington on Friday, you know, what an interesting battle. And this is sort of like Kai's proving ground of having to go against Gressel, right? A one-to-one matchup into, you know, who, I don't want to say who the serves, but who wants to be who wants to be the best paid left back or left fullback of the entire league. Well, although, you know, Gressel was used as a you know, on the right side this time around. So I was totally fine with it considering that lineup, which was a bit of a shocker, right? Especially when you see the faces yeah. of Quinn Sullivan and Donovan up top and then an aging Bedoya, Jack McGlynn, and a Nate Harriel as a center back too. Just a really fascinating lineup. And, you know, I think it gets lost in the sauce because of the situation, never mind the opportunity that, you know, one of our players was pulled down, but then Ua, I think it was Carranza who was pulled down, fell, should have been a red card, but because of the advantage and it was to the letter of the law, Mikel Ua went and hit the post. Just the turn of events was just so fast. And, you know, I, if that, if that situation doesn't happen, I think a lot of fans would be very happy with going to Columbus, tying and getting out of there as fast as they could.
Yeah, and I don't think they played poorly for the most part. I mean, they kind of survived the first 10 minutes, mm-hmm. but they kind of came to their own. I know I was talking to somebody online, and I said this is basically make it to halftime scoreless, or at least at a draw, and then just bring in the big guns to the second half and try to figure it out from there. And somebody had mentioned, well, it didn't work against Charlotte. It's like, yeah, but it technically did. I mean, if you want to think about what Jose, you always say, win at home, draw on the road. In yep. theory, we made it to halftime against Charlotte 0-0. We did leave Charlotte with a draw. No, it was not pretty, but we got the job done. I felt like we did that better against Columbus. We actually looked fairly decent. We had our chances. Even after the commentators, I think it was Twellman. He was like, wow, the Union have actually pretty grown into this match pretty well. And they actually look like they're being the more aggressor of the two teams.
I got to start watching games with the the English broadcast, because that's what everybody references. I don't watch them. I watch them in Spanish because I can, and it's nice for me to flex that muscle a little bit. But I guess Twellman had a lot of like quips in a way at during this game that I missed all of them, but people kept on talking about them.
I cut the audio after halftime. I like Twellman. I know he has Union ties and background. I get it. Like sometimes I'm just like, all right, just shut up.
Well, back then we were listening for JP, not so much for Taylor Twellman, just to be completely fair.
That's a fair point. Speaking of things that are within Union, you know, culture and all, Todd Lewis brings up a good point. It's a good segue here. He says, can you guys discuss your thoughts on the Union stealing the Colts stadium song? So I don't know if you saw this, Jose. But there's a Pat McAfee, the punter, whatever. He has his own podcast. And he mentioned how the Colts now you do the dupe song throughout the stadium. And he's like, yeah, I think it's this song by Maria or whatever. It's this band named Scooter. And it's just you got to fast forward to the minute. And it's just this great song that people start jamming out. And a lot of Union fans are like, that's our song. They stole our song. It's like, if you know Union history well enough, you know that we stole the song too. So yeah, don't get it twisted.
Colorado hockey, right?
No, I thought it was some sort of international soccer team. I think Kevin Kincaid actually posted the correct.
Wasn't it Bayern Leverkusen?
Something like that. Some team that I probably can't pronounce correctly. I know the Flyers actually used it for like a year and a half as well.
Gotcha.
But it is just funny how the Colts, for some reason, maybe they're, you know, their PA guy is a Union fan, and he just wanted. Here you go, Todd Lewis, of course, coming in.
Yeah,
from Germany. So, yeah, but thanks for bringing that up, Todd, because I found it funny too how many people got upset by that. And so you guys really have not understood the Union's history. But to going back to the Columbus Crew game, I do find it interesting how versatile Nathan Harrell has been this year. Now, I know that we haven't also been favorable for him being on the left side. We saw him against Atlanta, but he has played, what, three or four different positions this season. He's kind of coming to his own. He's having his own breakout year. He really is. Nathan seems like the guy of the future, especially with Olivier is on his way out, which I don't even know when that's happening at this point. Have you heard anything about that?
No, it'd be interesting to ask again. You know, that completely has sort of like gone over my head in a way, right? With everything that has been going on in terms of Kai, in terms of playing as many matches, et cetera, that entire conversation. And then you throw in, you know, the Mbiza situation with Jim sort of like tactfully calmed down a bit, right? It's not like he's like knocking at the door to leave. This is something that has been a conversation for a little while now. So it'd be interesting to get an update. But no, yeah, I think Nate has been just another revelation. We saw him score headers and goals, period, during Leagues Cup, and then playing different positions throughout the year, sometimes very well, sometimes not so well. But this weekend, it totally worked. And it was great to see, again, you know, thinking about rotation.
How many years we spent dying for a right back to score a goal? Now it just seems like, oh, well, Nathan Ariel, as they called him on the Twitter feed, just does it again with his head. I know. I kind of like that name, Nathan Ariel. It's kind of
Nathan Ariel. Yeah. He only does everything.
He only does everything. So the Union again now are unbeaten through six matches. They have not won a game since the Red Bull match, which seems like so long ago, right before that break. And now on Wednesday we face off against Atlanta. Yeah, it's been a while. Now I'm a bit worried about Atlanta. They have been playing better lately. I would not want to play a playoff game at Atlanta right now. What are your thoughts on this match coming up on Wednesday?
Listen, I hate to keep rehashing the conversation from Friday, but like, you know, it's necessary to really say it out loud. The Union want to find themselves, I think, in a situation where they don't have to go to either, hopefully not have to go to New England or Atlanta or Charlotte. You know, if Charlotte sneaks in and makes, and you know, remove those stadiums, because otherwise, otherwise it's a very, very sticky situation for the Union. So listen, Atlanta is a strong team, right? They have a, and I struggle with his name. The Greek, I think he's Greek. Or I'm assuming his name's based on his name that he's Greek, but their striker, he's in the race for the Golden Boot, right?
He is. I'm about to pull up his stats right now. Grigorios Giokoumakis, I may have butchered that. He is Greek. He has, at the moment, 15 goals.
Yeah, so no, I mean, that's
very much in the run.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? Someone like him can be just so, so dangerous. And but we also, and this is another question tomorrow during the press conference, right? Or I'm sure the update will be shared. You know, where's Glesnes? Because he's been massive at pocketing very strong and versatile strikers like a Benteke, right? Yeah. With DC United, though systematically you could argue that maybe Benteke is not great in getting the greatest service, but nonetheless, the times that Benteke has been on the field against the Union, he's sort of been just pocketed in a way.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, Atlanta, and you cannot forget about the young Argentine Thiago Almada, who I think is, after the season, going to make Atlanta a lot of money. It's just whether or not it's at A or B club in Europe or country, I should say. So just a lot of dangerous pieces. So we'll see what happens. I wouldn't be surprised if we go into a sixth straight draw.
And they've been winning and or drawing pretty well. I mean, if you look at their August games, they beat Seattle 2-0. They beat Nashville 4-0. They only lost to Cincy by 1. In September, they were undefeated. They went 2-2 against Dallas. They beat Miami 5-2. They drew against DC United on the road, and they beat CF Montreal at home on the 23rd of September 4-1. So they've been playing pretty well. In terms of the head-to-head matchup, if you look at the last 5 games between the Union and Atlanta FC, it is 2-0 Atlanta on the last match on July 2nd. Otherwise, the Union have either drawn or beaten Atlanta. So it's been a fairly close rivalry. I feel like that Atlanta match on the road was just a recipe for disaster when it started because of that lineup that we put out there and Nathan Harrell playing completely out of position on the left side of the back line. So I do hope that Jim has corrected those issues since then. In terms of the goals for and the goals against, let me try to pull that up stat real quick. But in terms of the lineup, as I pull this up next, what's the lineup you're thinking of with this really banged up Union lineup?
I'm going to go ahead and assume that we don't see a Jacob Glesnes, Martinez. And I know he's back in the States, and I can't imagine that he's back to playing anytime soon. Might just be sort of like a Reese Hoskins / Philly situation, right? With Leon Flack. Maybe he comes in when it's actually the playoffs, which even then, that's, I think, to me, more scary and more dangerous. But I think Jim might be a little more encouraged by what he saw in the Columbus Crew. So I could see a low Elliott, Harriel, and Bizo, and Kai sort of situation. McGlynn, Bueno, Bedoya, and then take Bedoya out, put Gazdag. I think Danny getting a game off is probably enough for him. And then you put the Carranzas and Uas of the world. So Carranza, Ua, McGlynn, Bueno, Gazdag, Mbizo, Harriel, Elliott, Lowe, and Wagner. And obviously, I mean, Blake.
So you don't think Bedoya starts on Wednesday?
No, and I know he only played 46 minutes, but listen, I think this team's getting ready to, and I've been asking about it, you know, this thoughtfully move on and sure, the playoffs are come in, but maybe this is where, okay, let's really get into the super sub, right? let's have you come in, finish the last 30, last 25 minutes, hopefully, you know, something along those lines. But it's again, Jim continues to praise him for the leadership, et cetera. And that's totally true and valid. It's just maybe the, you know, last 30 minutes is the best way. But how about yourself? How do you see this lineup coming out?
I know the Union have typically gone with what has worked in the last game. So if you have a good rotation, good lineup, good outcome, they typically do it again on the next match. The problem I have is just how little rest they've gotten. Now, GM has mentioned that this schedule they have right now is very much similar to what they had in League's Cup, where it was Wednesday, Saturday. They had that short rest. And according to him, that's perfectly fine for the way they rotate things and the way they train, they heal. I don't know if I agree with that right now. I think there's no way these guys are at all in the fitness level they would be at League's Cup. Pat Bernard, by the way, what's up, fellas? How you doing? I asked Bedoy if the injuries and the tough schedules wearing on the locker room. He said it is. However, he likes guys stepping up, which is what we saw from Quinn Sullivan. And Jose, you know I'm a big Quinn Sullivan stan, so I'm really happy right now that Quinn's getting his minutes and also scoring. And Eric says, Jim finally subbed in the last game. He won't do that again. And that's the thing, Eric, to your point, I was very shocked. I really was that we saw that rotation. I don't think we're going to see that again on Wednesday, especially with us being home. But now the thing is, we do travel to – we have a road match on Saturday, or is it at home? No, it's at home against Nashville.
It's at home. And, you know, to back up a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
You know, when I asked Jim about Donovan and Sullivan going to Union 2, very interesting, Chris Donovan played just as much as Quinn Sullivan, but Donovan was the one who moved to go to New England to play. Quinn was saved by not putting more minutes into his body, right? When you think about the body management. So I wonder if he's going to have a larger role to play on Wednesday's match than, you know, usually.
Also, you have to think of where he's going to play on Wednesday, if that's the case, if he's going to be in the midfield compared to up top, where he may get more miles on his legs. And also, with the game on Saturday being against Nashville, I mean, it's tough to say you can even rotate. The problem is, I know when the lineup came up on Saturday, half of the Union population was in the arms saying, how are we going to win this game with this rotation? This rotation sucks. I'm not even going to watch the fucking game. It's like, these players need rest. They just simply need rest. You can't drive them into the ground. So, I don't see...
Yeah,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I've been so out of touch in a way with anything below fifth place because of how tight the East has been. But listen, Nashville's in seventh place. I completely forgot, you know, and I still, you know, remember Walker Zimmerman sending that ball into the river and that penalty shootout. So just interesting. I think just very dangerous team. Very, very dangerous team, and you do not. And although they've had, I think, favorable results or okay results at Geodis Park, I have, as I mentioned to Renee, very little hope to see the Union win away from home. Drawing maybe, but winning, I have very little faith.
I don't think so either. Eric says Blake called out MLS for playing many games, which is what we talked about earlier, Eric. And yeah, I think it's a fair point. It's good to see Andre, who is a recognized leader in the league. And then obviously the Union stepping up and saying that. But to your point, Jose, I do think it's a similar lineup to you. The Atlanta United team has given up a total of 47 goals this year. The Union have only given up 37. However, Atlanta does have a bigger output in terms of goals scored. They've scored 61, while the Union have only scored 53. So, you know, Atlanta's probably going to get one, at least. I'd be shocked if the Union shut them out. But then again, the Union shut out LAFC, but that might have also been part of the weather and LAFC not having a very strong offensive team compared to past years. So I don't know if I'm being weirdly optimistic. I don't know why I am optimistic. Maybe this is the game they break out and they just beat the shit out of them. Or as Jillian says, throttle them. I don't know.
Jillian's throttling people left and right.
What's your score prediction, Jose, for tonight, for Wednesday's match?
I see a Phillies win, but also I think a 2-1 Union win. I think somebody else is going to step up. I actually don't see a Carranza or Ua scoring goals. I think it'll be someone else, and it might be a Gastak type of situation. And we were robbed of something we haven't seen in a while. Someone else take a penalty outside of Daniel Gastak when that penalty was called back. So, yeah, I mean, maybe I'm being overly optimistic, but I think maybe this is where, you know, being at home finally pays off. Though I think us taking my journalist hat off and putting my fan hat back on, I think that stadium's going to be so empty on Wednesday, and it's going to be so difficult to get up and down 95 to go to the stadium with everything that's going on with the Phillies kickoff at 8:08.
That's the problem is you're kind
kickoff,
of
running, first pitch,
first pitch. I mean, close enough. That's one big thing too, because once you lose the fans from the stadium, even if it's at least over 70% capacity, you're fine. But if it's closer to 50 because of the Phillies playing, that's a pretty big drop off. And that's definitely in favor of Atlanta.
Yeah, and that's just it, right? I don't think Atlanta needs any more boost or handicaps to make them competitive, right? They're so good as is, and that roster is just fast. It's good. So hold on. So, oh, Mr. Gaston, how are you? Do you guys think this team has that other gear like the Union teams of the past two seasons?
No.
Well, Mr. Gaston, I think that's actually a very valid question. I say Mr. Gaston, he was my teacher. I think one thing to remember is that last year specifically, those were a lot of career years for these players. And you also did not have an additional 7 or 8 matches in the middle of July and August to boot with everything going on with the Champions League, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So to expect something similar like that is, I think, a fool's errand in a way. I think you, myself, and Dave were all prepared for what we're seeing now. And listen, I want to give our friend Eric Stankovic. I can't even know how to say
Stankovic.
Thank you. Yeah. He reminded me of something I said, which I stand by. Maybe it wasn't a great idea to bring back the 92 minutes of last year, 92% of the minutes of last year. So fair. I don't know. It's tough.
So I do think they could have another gear, but it just has to come from somewhere very deep within. And also, you mentioned the career years that we've seen from last year. I mean, as of right now, do you think any player right now is having a career year? I mean, Gazak's putting up good numbers. You could say maybe. I mean, Glessens, I would say, has had his bad moments. Harriel might be having the best season out of everybody. Who knows?
Yeah, I definitely not Blake. And I think that has to do with the back line, right? He was blessed the last couple of years with just like stonewall type of defense. The defense is still good. And I think a lot of teams were bite their arm off to have what the Union have defensively, right? In comparison to what they may have. Maybe Kai, maybe fewer goals, but still sort of tiptoeing with what he did last year, which is still very, very good. Maybe that's more of a Kyle, can you stat check that for me? Because I know you got some sort of spreadsheet in your brain that can tell you whether or not that's true. But the fire in Kai's belly to get paid, maybe he's pushing him to do as well as he does, though he is missing a game. So there's 90 minutes he won't be playing and opportunities to get assists and goals this year. So I don't know.
I guess Bueno would be having probably the most promising year.
Yeah, I mean, it's also the comparison of like 1%. Yeah, and Frank said it. You guys were thinking alike, right? Bueno going from playing no minutes to playing, you know, 90 minutes. That's like a 900% increase of what he was playing. So it goes to show that, you know, just him alone getting as much exposure. And bravo to him. Again, despite being, dismissed. Dismissed from, from the national camp. He was brought back to be given a second opportunity with Venezuela for the Brazil and Chile games, in mid October. So, I'm just so happy for him because I genuinely mean it when I say that. When me and Roberto Vinces were talking to him after the one match, he was gutted, man. To be dismissed from the national team camp because of an injury that was just practice, not even like game day warm up or like mid match, broke his heart. And you know, everybody dreams of representing their country, and especially as a South American, I'm sure as a child he was thinking about wearing that jersey. So I'm just so glad he's getting another opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jose. We have the match on Wednesday. I know Saturday, we try to touch on both matches. I think Saturday is very much up in the air because you don't really know what you're going to get on Wednesday. And that's why we haven't done the betting thing either, because it's been so hard to predict these lineups every single week because players are dropping like flies because we have no idea what we're doing now at this point. But final prediction, you said 2-1, right, Union?
Yeah, I said 2-1, and that's maybe entirely too optimistic, but someone has to be.
I mean, Dave, if Dave was here, I know he's right now, Dave's traveling, so he can't join us. But if Dave was here, he would say a draw again. which would be 7 straight unbeaten, which isn't terrible. I mean, ending the year. But one more comment up before I do my score prediction. Kyle says, honestly, I think Bueno, Jack, Quinn, and even Dom have grown the most this year, which is fair. That's a fair point. I feel like the young guys have stepped up. But, you know, I would also like to see players like Raffanello have that opportunity to step up. Because, honestly, Gosdog could probably use a longer break, too. And obviously, Torres isn't the option, so...
Listen, with Jack, the one thing I will say is he has had stinkers this year, right? And I think a lot of players did, but the one specifically that I go to is that LAFC match, despite, you know, the weather condition and whatnot. Man, and I think Kevin Kincaid said it best, but like, listen, I appreciate the sentiment, but I'm not sure that Jack McGlynn has put his best showing against LAFC, who's supposed to be, you know, this year's second best, maybe second best. I think there's still some spots to be decided with the final table for the West Side, with St. Louis clinching first, which congratulations to them. First year, first place. That's incredible. Yeah. But listen, Jack McGlynn did not show why he should be getting a U.S. men's national team call-up based on that LAFC game. So hopefully he picks it up and sorts himself out, you know, conditions aside. Oh, wait, this is a good question.
Yeah, go ahead. I'll let you post it.
Yeah, okay, cool. Why does Jim not play Torres? Good question.
I feel like he just doesn't have what they were hoping for. They wanted Ilsenio to be, and Valerie's joined us. Hi, Valerie. I appreciate it. Martinez is here. He has stepped up. He has scored finally. So it's kind of nice seeing him get that that up in his game. But to Eric's point, I just feel like they wanted to have what they had from Ilsenio, to have that playmaker on the ball. They did not get it. And at times, Torres just isn't what we need in terms of transitioning. He's obviously not the biggest guy in the world either. So he's getting bumped off the ball when he does have a chance. But otherwise, it also leads to a question, well, maybe Jim just doesn't like him. Just because what happened with Perea? Like, right? He's obviously a better option than Torres, but it's clearly there was some sort of disconnect along the way.
Yeah, and go ahead.
Todd says, because he sucks. He's a winger. You don't play with wingers. And that's also very fair.
Say that to his face, Todd, on Wednesday or Saturday. I want you to call him out in the press area to come out and just say that. I'll translate it for you, too, on Saturday if you want. No, listen, in terms of Torres, I think it's sort of what you mentioned, Mike, right? Something did not go right, or the union bet on him and got something completely wrong. And that's fine. I know there's a lot of comments popping up about the positioning and the way that the union play. Well, I like to think that Ernst Tanner knows how he wants Jim to play and how Jim wants to play, that he would find players, especially intra-league, that benefit the formations that he wants. Please put it up. But it obviously just isn't. And people keep referring this moment to me. I wish there was a video. Actually, I don't remember the exact match, but I remember looking it back up on Apple TV in case there was an angle. But someone mentioned, you know, when Jim made his last sub, and I forget which game, it was at home, and it wasn't Torres. As soon as the 90th minute came in, Torres sprinted into the locker room, and someone said that he was kicking shit on long the way in. Just like,
I think it was the match that Raffanello came into the Red Bull game.
Okay, so apparently Torres went in and was very emotional and was just kicking stuff, like probably like those metal barriers, or just like, you know, just upset. And that's fine. And backtrack to not this draw, but the previous one was sort of, he was finally asked, and, you know, Jim's being Jim and saying, you know, he has to sort himself out, and you know, it's a two-way street, right? Finding yourself and doing well in practice, but also on our end as a coach, finding places where we can put him to succeed versus just put him to drown after not playing for so long. I think it's just an absolute miss. And I don't know the terms of his contract. It's sort of like, you know, going over my head right now, but I can't imagine that he sticks around on this roster, especially with, you know, changes of rules in the future, that he's taking up money that could be spent somewhere else.
And he's also an older player. I mean, you know, he's going to want to play on a team that he can at least get relatively steady and consistent substituted minutes in, which he's not right now. And that sucks for him, because he's, you know, he is like, what, he's in mid-30s, right?
Yeah, and you know what? I want to look this up, and I know I'm holding up the show for a second, so maybe vamp for a second.
Sure. I would love to.
But Joaquin Torres is
34.
He probably I don't know how old he is, but he is making $309,000 a year on this roster.
That's I can do the same thing on the bench. I'm about the same height. I'm fairly quick. I can make $100,000. I'll be fine with that. We'll be all right.
and I don't mean what this transfer. I know this is Jim's like go to, but transfer market. What is Joaquin Torres worth? Because I think is it our friend Eric? You know what is he worth? I can't imagine that he's worth much considering how much he's depreciated this year. 1.8 million pounds. I don't know what that translates to dollars, but not a lot.
No.
Considering the stinky MLS stink, you know, that he's got on him right now from not playing at all.
We have a Jay Simpson comment in the comments. I mean, that's, oh my goodness. That's a throwback name right there. All right. So prediction wise, you said 2-1, I'm going to be somewhat pessimistic, but I'm going to go 1-0 or 1-1 rather. I'm sorry. 1-1 draw at home. And Kyle says, do you have Pokemon tattoos like Taurus? No, I don't. But don't tempt me, Kyle. I got a Pikachu one for the next match. Let me read the sponsors.
Yeah, go ahead. I wonder if Joaquin Taurus's parents were also jockeys.
Maybe. Listen, man. We're small people. We thrive on top of horses.
Dude, that blew my mind.
Yeah, 30 years. Allstate Insurance Agency, Deborah Sigler at C750 Iroquois Trail number 3 in Allentown, specializing in insurance for auto, home renters, life, and much more. Get a quote today by calling 610-395-6100. We have Vinny's Pizza and Restaurant. Discover a new favorite by trying their top pizzas in Allentown, plus pasta, salads, calzones, sandwiches, and more. Check out their menu at vinniespizzarestaurant.com. We have Stuffed the Grills, offering a unique twist on a traditional sandwich shop. They have homemade hot and cold sandwiches, salads, appetizers, baked goods, available for all events at stuffthegrills.com. I know Dave loves it. And then we have Manscaped. Get 20% off by using the code AATSports at manscaped.com. And lastly, Philly Sports Trips. Join us in New York or Washington. Secure your spot at phillysportstrips.com and select Allentown Pickup at checkout. Jose, any last thing you want to say on this lovely episode where we kind of went on tangent?
Yeah, here? I know. And Todd's going to make a comment to me separately, I'm sure, or even within the chat. So I'll vamp enough for him to catch up to the video, but kept it under an hour. I'm sure by the time he comments and gets to watch it, it'll be like an hour one or hour two.
You got a 2-minute warning, buddy. It's already 57 minutes.
No, and this specifically, you know, it's, thank you to Todd, Kyle, Jillian, yourself, and you know a couple of guys on AAT. I had that wonderful conversation, and I don't even want to call it an interview. And actually, Ibun Olaloye didn't even use the word interview. He felt like it was a conversation as well as we were texting. The co-founder and creative director of Live Breathe Football, a really interesting clothing company that designed those really, really cool pieces that were announced and I guess officially sold in September of this year. Had a wonderful conversation with them, and just a huge thank you to everybody who watched that, that was willing to give me some feedback, and ultimately anybody who, you know, honestly even like shared it or thought about it more than once. Because I gotta tell you, I've never filmed an interview. I've never filmed an interview with two cameras. I've never edited an interview video like that. Never mind produced it and published it all by myself. So it was a learning experience. Mr. Gaston, if you're still watching, I hopefully think that you will watch it and give me some feedback. Though remember, I never actually did well in your class. He was my sort of like video AV teacher that I sort of just, you know, did because I needed credits, but I learned so much from him. But no, a huge thank you to everybody who's been sort of, you know, watching the content and sharing the content. That was an awesome conversation.
So Todd says, we went off the rail with it tonight. We thrive on top of horses and talking about throttling. Todd is just on one today. I like it. And there you go.
There's Mr. Gaston. No, Mr. Gaston, watch that. If you haven't, it's on, I'll send it to you via message on Facebook. I'm very proud of it, though. I'm sure with your eye and your, you know, skills, you probably could have made it that much better, but it was so much fun to learn and use DaVinci Resolve and learn how to color correct video and adjust audio, etc. It was a long weekend, but a fun weekend. But again, thank you to everybody who's been interacting with our content.
Yeah. So for those who haven't checked it out, go to the AAT Sports Network YouTube channel. I think it's on the username AAT Birds. You can see it on there, subscribe, like, all of our stuff goes live there, and all the shows obviously you can watch there as well. For me though, Jose, like I said, it's been a busy week. I was in Disney for a week with my kid. I've been trying to get back into the swing of things out in Jersey. Finally feel back to normal, so I'm looking forward to a nice week. I know we got two matches ahead of us. If the Union pull off 4 points, I think that's a positive 4 points, right? You'd say?
I think a lot of people would, again, I keep on using this phrase because it cracks me up. A lot of us would be biting our arms off after dropping 10 points in all these matches leading the way.
Absolutely. All right, final thing. Frank says, thanks, Eric. Frank. Oh, there's Eric. There you go. He comes What's in up, at the final end there. Appreciate all the comments as always. This is Across the Pitch. You can check us out every Monday night, 8:45 p.m. Go Union.
Keep on throttling.